Welcome to Living Western, a show dedicated to telling the real story of the rural American West through individual stories of the amazing people who call this part of the world home. Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Living Western podcast. My name is Clayton Markser. The guest on today's episode is a fascinating individual. He is as cowboy as they come. However, he was not born into this life. While some of us, like myself, were born into the Western way of life, quite literally, this man was not. He was born into what we would call the city life, on the outskirts of Denver, Colorado. But it didn't take him very long as a young man to figure out what it was he wanted in life, and he happened to have some amazing mentors that helped him get on the right path to achieving those dreams. And achieve them, he has, and he's still achieving them today. He's been a professional bull rider, a very successful one, winning hundreds of thousands of dollars, many other awards, made a career out of it. He's also been a reality TV show star, and he's a stuntman body double for the lead actor in a very popular new Western TV series. But more important than all of those things that he's done is probably his passion project, which is called Just Believe. What you're going to hear today is his story, and a lot of the story of his program, Just Believe. I'd call today's guest a force of nature, and some might call him the ultimate cowboy. Please welcome Mr. Jamon Turner. Thank you for joining us, Jamon. I'm really excited about this interview because I saw you on the Ultimate Cowboy Showdown Season 3, and you were a hand, and that was easy to tell, but there was a certain part of that episode where you were talking to Trace, and you brought up your passion project, which is being a mentor to young people. And I spent some of my life years ago as a cadre instructor for a at-risk youth organization. So I also have that passion. And so I really connected with you in that segment of the show. Let's just get into it with, tell us a little bit about you and what is Jamon Turner all about?
I'm still trying to figure that part out. Yeah, for sure. I'm big into agriculture and outside. My passion for just life and living and growth and seeing things come from the ground, you know, self-sufficiency to some extent, you know, like that's, I thrive in that. I cowboy as well for a living. I train horses, so I have a 2-year-old operation that, you know, it's based on putting foundations on 2 and 3-year-old horses. I take in some older horses, do some cow horses, that's kind of just that's what feeds my soul. But I have other things as far as, you know, my youth programs, like we talked about, that are really like what keep me going on a regular basis. It's passion for the community. The next generation of, you know, farmers, ranchers, cowboys, we need more rodeo contestants for sure. So, this is my way to kind of help add to that population.
Awesome. And you also, obviously you did some TV work with Ultimate Cowboy Showdown. And I saw from your Instagram stuff that you got to do some film work. Talk about that a little bit.
So I had dabbled in it some other years, doing some stunt work from some smaller films. But by the grace of God, I got an opportunity to go double for the new Bass Reef series that came out on Paramount. It was a pretty neat experience, you know. I hadn't really worked a show that long. You know, I'd done 4 or 5 days in, do my deal, and then leave. But that was nice because I got the whole run of the show. I got to experience different aspects of the film industry. And even in there, man, it's so crazy how closely intertwined these worlds really are. I mean, they're so far apart because they don't speak the same language or do the same thing, but the need for both of them, you know, when it comes to, you know, filmmakers recreating and telling the story of, you know, how we got to where we are in Western culture today, all the different influences from, you know, sheriffs and cowboys and Indians to how the rodeo circuit, all these things in the media and being televised, have helped bring light to what this world's like. But, you know, in the Western industry, this can also be an asset for us to tell the story and what it's like, the hardships, the growth, the happiness, you know, things that relate to the same things other people go through on a regular basis, you know, the ups and downs of life. But it's our story. And I think, you know, using both of those together, that was kind of a neat niche. I got some ideas on how I'd like to pour into some of that one day.
Well, that's awesome. I also have a little bit of a connection with you there. Not that we've ever worked on anything, but kind of a similar deal. Years ago, I got asked to be part of a low budget Western, and I was just going to be there to be the wrangler, basically. But I ended up getting some lines and got to do some stunts. And that was actually a dream come true. And a little backstory to that was, when I got divorced in 2014, I was kind of going through a real rough patch emotionally. And I kind of admitted to myself and my best friend that at that specific point in my life, I'd gotten in the mode of just surviving and kind of given up on all my goals. And in trying to figure out how to move forward, I decided, well, if I don't have any goals, I need to like sit down and write something down, because a goal not written down is just a wish. So I decided, all right, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that is like a concrete goal. So I'm going to go back. And from the age of probably 5 or 6, one of the things that I'd always wanted to do was be an extra in a Western movie and be on a hunting TV show. And so I wrote both of those down. And within a year, without me chasing the opportunity came for both of them. And
for sure,
the filming stuff ended up being so fun. I mean, the production side of it, it's not exactly exciting all the time. There's a lot of hurry up and wait and sitting around, but I really enjoyed the whole process, and it's given me some cool opportunities. So I can see that in you. You've had this opportunity to kind of dabble in TV and in movies now, and it's opening up doors and opportunities for you for your other passions. How has the Ultimate Cowboy Showdown TV show deal affected you in your pursuit of your nonprofit? And let's talk, what is your nonprofit? Can you tell us what the name is and what it's about?
For sure. Yeah. So the organization is called Just Believe Training. We operate under an adult, set of groups. And then we have a youth set of groups. So the one that I've been so prominent about is Just Believe Youth. And what it is, we teach agricultural trades. We use Western sport, rodeoing. Sometimes we do some English riding, dressage type that clinics. But for the most part, it's all Western sport as a way to kind of hook kids. So you have, I don't care where you're from, if you've lived in the city, if you lived in the country, like most kids at some point get on somebody's back and pretend that they're riding a horse around or riding a bull, you know. And believe it or not, whether you're in the inner city or in the country, like the kids bond over that. So this program has been a way to kind of merge the gap between different communities and groups of people that really don't come together in walks of life just based on, you know, where they live at. An opportunity to come and learn some of the same stuff. You know, there's over 100 trades that, you know, you're accessible just by messing with the horse. And if I can expose, you know, youth to that, whether they're just ranch kids and who don't know anything else about, you know, some of these other trades, but it's so close to them, or city kids who have no idea that's even accessible for them. They all come together for the same weekend, man, and we put them on teams. They're learning to train horses for the weekend. They have some clinics that they get to choose from between like roping clinics, bulldog and bullfighting clinics. And then they learn something that ties directly to the agricultural trades. Welding classes, farrier classes, equine dentistry classes. We've been AIing cows, preg checking, stuff like that for kids who've never done that. It's unreal.
So that whole thing is kind of like not only my dream, but my father's dream, being able to connect with kids and mentor young people. And so you're doing something really cool and really special to me. And so you mentioned that in the Ultimate Cowboy Showdown TV show. So obviously it was already going. Did being on the show change anything or bring you more opportunities with that specific project?
I think that mentally it was refreshing for the feedback for the people that my heart pours out to impact, to see them, people that I would have never even thought watched that show, you know, send me Facebook and Instagram messages, you know, one commenting on the design for the program and how fruitful it was needed. That was encouragement, you know, some of which, like my character, you know, and those two things are really, really heavy to me, you know, your purpose and your character. So, to have people speak to me, complete strangers, on a basis of those things, that was a little bit of fuel on the fire. It did kind of give me some headway with some different organizations. I picked up a really big good sponsor, right after that for the youth program. And it was something that I've been trying to land a deal like this for a while. And then I had a gentleman reach out, said that he never seen the show, but he read about the article that came out in the newspaper about the show and had my youth program. So he said he looked it up, fell in love with it, met with me. And I mean, dude's been rocking with me for a couple of years now. It's been imperative on like the type and the quality of events we can host in different places. So,
well, all of that is a good example of what you said earlier about how these two worlds, like the film and TV world and agriculture and rural living, how they actually are connected in more ways than we realize.
For sure.
Can you give us a little bit of your backstory? I mean, I've read that you were from Denver and you didn't grow up ranching, or you weren't born into ranching, I should say.
So my grandfather, he's always raised and shown horses, but he lived, you know, an hour or so away from me. My family and my immediate family in my house, we never raised on a ranch. I do have, Charlie Sampson kind of raised me in this. He had horses right down the road from me, a couple blocks away. And then by the time I figured out I wanted to ride horses, man, I'd get on my bike after school. I'd ride miles to somebody's barn, clean stalls just to get on horses, you know? So there was about 7 or 8 little farms and ranches around me that would allow me to come in and, you know, do some chores and stuff like that. But man, what hooked me was Western Sport. I started riding bulls. I didn't need a horse. I didn't need very much. I could build little bucking barrels and stuff in the backyard and, you know, mentally and vividly picture what it was like. And that was my practice for a long time. And then I got good out of nowhere, man. And it just, so I stuck with it. I quit playing football. And I dedicated myself to this. And it's cool because like I've been able to see like both sides of the tracks, you know. I know what it's like to live in the city and, you know, your box for what you can envision being, you know, primarily based on what you're exposed to, you know, versus I've seen how like in Western culture, man, just not living in the city, how many more things you're exposed to, you know, your box doesn't look like this. It looks like this, you know? And I've seen that there's a need for relationship and all that. And man, I caught that at a young age. And I think that's really what just drove me to stay committed to this. And now you couldn't get me to buy a house in town.
Never. That's awesome. Well, it's kind of a big blessing to be like born into a home that was neighbors basically, or pretty close by a gentleman that was, I think was the 1982 world champ bull rider. Yeah. Am I right?
All right. All right.
and I think he was the first black world champion bull rider.
To this day, the only.
That's pretty cool that you were planted into an area right close to him and he was able to mentor you.
And in that, man, what's the bigger pitch, bigger story, like, is like, how that pyramid, you know, he won the world. I know at some point he expected me to go win the world and that was the goal, but you know, I just wanted to ride bulls. I don't really care about winning a world title. I never did. I wanted to ride ranked bulls, have high scores and stuff like that. But the biggest thing was like, I learned from him how to invest in somebody, you know, of all the things that I've picked up from this lifestyle, like intentionality and learning how to invest were probably the two biggest lessons that I received. And it's like, you know, I'm literally paying for the same thing that he taught me, you know, and I just, yeah, man, I wouldn't trade this.
Well, that's admirable. And it sounds like you also had a mentor as far as the rural lifestyle. You had a mentor in your grandfather.
For sure. Yeah, like I said, he raised horses, raised team roping horses and Appaloosas. And it just, you know, he always told me he didn't want nothing to do with riding bulls. It wasn't his thing, but if I ever wanted to ride a horse, I was always welcome. So, I grew up riding horses, and then there was a point where I had to shift, but you know, the lessons and stuff that, and the time that we spent, it wasn't so much my mentor in lifestyle anymore. It was like learning who I was.
So as you were going through childhood, when you kind of went out on your own, was your full-time job at that point, your career, when you went out on your own, was that bull riding, or what were you doing for a living?
Yeah, I've, since I left high school, that's really been what I pursued, you know, and I did good. I was in college and stuff. So, you know, I never really had to have jobs and stuff. There was always enough bull ridings to go to around, you know, all the places that I've lived to keep money in my pocket. I've never really had a lot of jobs, to be honest. I went straight from riding bulls to, I worked for about a year with different parts of things with the school systems, but I was like, it was always something that I wanted, an idea that I had that I worked at, and I wanted to present that to a school. So then, you know, I'd work for 6 months a year doing some kind of extra class or something like that. Or, you know, I've learned to weld, lay carpet, just stuff that, you know, jobs while I was rodeoing and I needed some money or something like that. Yeah, man, I've learned a lot of trades. I've never worked a job. I've only worked like one job my entire life. And it was at work, working on, we're assembling oil rigs. I forgot the name of it, but man, I worked there for probably 3 months while I had a torn groin. I couldn't handle it. I quit. After I got healthy, I went back to riding bulls, riding horses, and just figuring out ways to use what this, you know, what the earth gives you to make money. It's not hard though.
So let's dive into that a little deeper. When you said you couldn't handle it, do you mean working for somebody else versus working for yourself?
No, that's never bothered me, because there's always something to learn from working from somebody else in a season, for sure. I think more so just not having control of my own free time, that eats me up. It's been that way since I was little. Like, you had all the money in the world, but if you spend, you know, 21 hours out of the day making it, like, you still don't have any money. You piled it up, but you can't do nothing with it. So like, learning how to be in control of my free time and still meet all of my financial needs and save, that was what was challenging. And it seemed like it was easier to go learn something else that I might need. And I, you know, and everybody kind of condemned me for it. You need to stick with a job. But now it's like, I can do a lot of different stuff and survive. I've built a skill set, and it's always paid my bills for what was going on. Man, am I making sense what I'm saying?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I had the same people talking about security. I mean, I grew up in a very secure home. My dad, he managed one of the largest ranches in the country for many years. So he worked there for over 37 years. He managed it for 21. Mm-hmm. So like, we lived in the same place, like a couple different houses on the ranch, but we lived on the same ranch for all of my childhood. He always had that secure job. And, you know, there was a lot of value placed on that. Fact is, when I was a young man, I remember in the hiring world, it was kind of looked down upon if you had lots of different jobs on your resume, because it showed that you couldn't stick with something. But that has really shifted now. So, I've talked about this in other podcasts. I've kind of reached this point in my life. I'm 41, and I've always had security. Like, I've always had a good job. And now I'm at this point where I do have a real good government job, and then I do extra day work, whatever, when it comes up. But I have gotten to the point where I'm feeling trapped, feeling hooked by that security. And while the security is a wonderful thing and it's a blessing, that fear of losing that security has kind of crippled me. And I've gotten to the point where I don't do the things that I used to do. I spent a lot of my life on a horse's back. I helped teach people all over the country as an apprentice to a clinician. I made my living on a horse's back. And in the last several years, I've gained weight, and I've had a couple horse wrecks in the last decade that have hurt me. And I have this mental block right now where getting on a horse right now has this scary level of risk. I'm afraid of getting hurt and being laid up, and then, or hurt and then not being able, like it being something more permanent. So I appreciate what you're talking about, where you're at. And I find myself jealous of that because there's a freedom that you have that I kind of aspire to, but also I have a family. I have three kids. So the opportunity for me to just jump and do stuff and take those big risks is a little bit more limited now. And looking back, if I could give myself some advice when I was in my early 20s, I had a couple really amazing opportunities handed to me, and I chose not to do them because there was risk. There wasn't security with them. And I only have a couple of regrets in my life, and those generally revolve around not taking that chance. So I appreciate what you have to say. I love your outlook on life there. And
that was more so when I was younger. That was definitely not how I live my life now. Like I grew up in a secure home. My parents, they provided what I need for sure. We had a nice house. When I was young, I don't have any kids now, but before I had like responsibilities and stuff, I never missed. Man, so my name means right hand of favor in Hebrew. I looked this up and it was unreal because like all my life I can look back and say it's been like that. I don't think that I've ever worried about the risk of the what if, because it's literally just, it's always worked out more in my favor than I can imagine. Like now I have, you know, mortgages and I have a couple of different businesses and stuff like that. So I hear you. I'm hesitant on some of the risks that I take because I'm like, dude, this could sideline my business, my money, you know, my effectiveness. But dude, I will tell you this. From this, you said you work in the government job. What exactly do you do?
So I work in natural resources. I originally worked for the United States Forest Service. And for the last 7.5 years, I've been working for the Natural Resources Conservation Service.
So I could feel in some aspect how that would always be applicable to life. There's two other things that I've always guaranteed that if you want security, you work in the food industry and you work with children. People are always going to constantly have children. They constantly need food, you know? So I never knew this while I was developing this business model for Just Believe or these counseling services. I never thought about this, but it's like this last 5 years, I see how my numbers rise and it's like, oh, okay. I've been able to kick back from when I first started this only because now like there literally legitimately is a security because people always need something. What this lifestyle provides to a rural kid, hey, that's one thing. But an inner city kid, this is a completely different world. Somebody will pay for that.
Going back to a previous job that I mentioned earlier, when I worked for, it's called the Montana Youth Challenge Academy. So it's quasi-military. Montana National Guard is kind of the head organization of it. So it wasn't boot camp. But we wore uniforms. They came in, they got their heads shaved and they, you know, basically like you're going into the military. And it's a 5.5 months residency and then another 12 months post residency. And for the 5.5 months that we had them, like we managed every minute of their lives. What you've got going with your Just Believe camps is a little bit similar to what I was doing, except for you get to do like ag stuff, horse stuff, trade stuff with these kids where it's pretty productive. And man, I wish we could have done more of that. Our program just wasn't quite set up that way. We do have a local gal here that does equine facilitated learning. She has a nonprofit and I am thrilled to death because last year she started working with the academy and doing EFL sessions with some of those kids. And, you know, that's incorporating them kind of into my world now. So I'm excited that is going on and I hope to get involved with it.
Yeah. What, man, you got to share me the link for this lady's thing. You know, these Western playgrounds go all over the United States and, you know, I've talked to Stephen Yellowtail a couple times too about hosting one up there in Montana. So,
well, yeah, I've never met Stephen, but we have a lot of connections. I hope to get him on the show too. And I think there's some opportunity in Montana to do some stuff like that.
Yeah, we've talked about some different ideas. I think more so I just need to build some more relationship, because these things are a collaborative effort. You know, my organization does a lot. We host them and stuff, but what makes them fruitful is the longstanding relationships afterwards. When we have clinicians and other barns that want to participate, these kids have an avenue to go continue their learning. It's not just a one-stop shop. You come once a year during our tour, you know. I don't feel like that does very much good. So the strength in this is building relationships with other organizations that can foster a continual flow of kids outside of that.
You haven't done anything in Montana yet?
No, I'd like to, for sure. I love Montana.
What are the setups of your program?
We have three to five day clinics that we host. We'll bring all the equipment, you know, to some places. I don't know if it'd probably be cheaper just to lease some stuff there in Montana to set up this. So it's called a Western Playground. That is the name of like the camps that we host, and the whole idea is from an industrial park to the back of a ranch. You know, where could we set up a learning space that is going to be outdoors and allow for all of the different, you know, programs that we have inside of a Western Playground to happen?
Let's talk about that a little deeper, because there's going to be some people that are going to hear this podcast from Montana, and it might spur some ideas. So for listeners who are listening to this that are interested in what you're doing and they want to help you bring your clinic to Montana, what do you need that maybe somebody can
provide? For the most part, panels, spaces, horses, and cattle. If we have enough space to set up 5 or 6 different round pens, we do colt starting challenges. We'll do sorting classes. We've used chickens and ducks and goats for the sorting for beginner kids, and then team them up with a group of kids who are well versed in cattle, and then put them on a team to sort cows at a gate. We just really need space. I need a lot of people who have a commitment to serving youth, and like not just, you know, the feel good, who I want to see this happen, but understand like this may be the only chance that you get to making sure that this is now a taxpaying citizen who can fend for herself versus somebody who just has a good time. People with that mentality of how this can benefit their community and the people around them. And then just space, you know, panels, you can buy them, you can lease them, I can haul them, you know, that works interchangeably. But I think the beginning of it is just having people who are tied on like that.
How many people do you need to put one of these on? Volunteers. Let's say you come to Montana. What do you need volunteer wise?
We usually only host 60 kids at a day, 60 kids at a time. Sometimes 60 straight, 60 come, or sometimes it's 120 between 2 days, 60 different kids both days. My favorite clinics are the ones where the same 60 stick all weekend so I can get to know them. But with that, man, I have a pretty good team. We probably need about 10, 15 volunteers. And that's just, you know, so that these kids have faces in the community that they can always relate to. My crew's pretty solid. It's mainly just people that want to come spend time with kids, want to help set up panels, want to pour in and encourage kids, group leaders, things like that.
Do you have all the instructors you need? Because like there's a lot of people in the trades, there's a lot of people around here that can teach them to rope or whatever. Or do you have that whole setup? You just need people to guide groups and set up panels.
I need a lot of legwork help like that. I have some clinicians and coaches that travel with me, you know, only because they know our mission and our program and how we our way of going about teaching that. So I keep the same guys on my team for the most part. I love having new guys show up though. Last year we started a colt starting competition to where we invited 4 different coaches. And each coach had 6 kids on their team. And for 2 days, you had to see how far you can get with your horse. I've been looking for a way to grow that a little bit more in the Western Playground. If something like that was to come about, I would want to have guys that already have a couple kids under their wing. And to where like my coaches can get the kids from the program. You know, how can I work this? Imagine us doing this in Montana, hypothetically, okay? And we had the Western Playground during the day where we had kids learning about trades, all of their Western sport. But in the evening time, we had a massive colt starting challenge, okay? We had 5 or 6 different round pens, and we had, you know, it's a 4-hour event. Everybody gets 2 hours. You have a guys local to Montana that already have maybe a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 17-year-old on their team. All my coaches have kids from the Western Playground, And for 2 hours each day, they get to mess with their horse and see who can get their horse the furthest. The coaches, you know, they get their points based on how they teach the kids. The kids get their points based on, hey, how's your participation? Was your teaching etiquette good enough to where you can teach a kid how to grab, get a hold of this horse, or whatever it is that you're getting scored on? Man, I think that would be a really unique way, just because I know there's so many nice horsemen in Montana. You know, I read and hear about it all the time. Like, there's a lot of guys there. So my thought is, if we can have something like that, along with the Western Playground, something that brought the whole community out, even if they already knew everything that we were teaching, man, that would be sweet.
How close to a big urban area do you need to have?
Ideally, to set something like this up, you want it to be to affect kids who, first of all, who don't have opportunity to this. And I say them first because, you know, you work from the bottom up, right? If I have a little bit of experience, I need to make sure that I'm at least tackling the kids who have none first. And then all, you know, another 25 spots be from kids that are local. The thing is, if we did this cold starting challenge, man, enough money will bring some people in there. Guys, even if they live 3 or 4 hours, if they know there's 7, 8, 10 grand added to a cold starting challenge, they'll show up for sure.
We'll brainstorm on this a little bit more, because I think there's some cool opportunity to affect some influence in some young people's lives through an avenue that hasn't really been pursued.
I like it.
Well, we may come back to some of this stuff, but I want to kind of move into another section, because we'll end up talking for hours and not really getting anywhere. You've told us a little bit about your backstory and your life and how you grew up around Denver. And then, due to some very influential mentors, it sounds like, is what really got your life on the direction that it is now. In that journey to where you are now, what are some of the mountaintop moments that you've had? Real high points in your life that will really stick with you and have really influenced who Jamon Turner is today?
I think, you know, there's always accolades from rodeo, college final, circuit final, stuff like that. Man, I think some of it, I'll give you one. So I don't have a lot of moments. I have seasons that are really good and I judge it based on, but I can tell you, man, when I walked away from riding bulls, it was one of those, like, you know how you're massaging a knot and it hurts like heck, but it feels so good. It was one of those moments. Like, it was hard to do, but I took pride in the discipline on saying, like, hey, there's other things for me to achieve. That has been a high moment for me, being able to walk away from something that, you know, fed me for so many years, confidently knowing that I trust my plan. You know, you can't take anything with you that you make, but if one, your legacy is solid, and two, like, if you can be true to yourself, that I put myself out there and it looked iffy, but I stuck to it, man, that's a high moment for me. Walking away from riding bulls and being invested in these youth programs immediately. I went from one to the other. All the different stuff that came in between it, you know, was difficult, but it's like every time you knock one of them out, you're a little bit higher. Then you go through another deal and you're a little bit higher. That's why I say it's seasons for me, not so much moments, but that season of the transition from one career to another career and keeping my fire and my passion inside of it. That's a high moment for me. I think the first time I landed one of these contracts with, you know, some juvenile programs, that was a high moment for me. They all spoke to the vision. Progress from today will show up in these people tomorrow, whether they're a student, whether they're kids, adults, you know, it keeps going. Same thing with horses. I would say a high moment for me was my first really big sale on a horse I started. That made me, I was pretty joyful for that. The cash flow, of course, but more so is like, I knew what I had put into that horse, you know?
It was validation. Sure.
Validation.
So, on the opposite side of that, tell us about maybe one of the hardest moments of your life. And most importantly, how'd you get through it?
Man, so I've never talked about this to anybody. I dodged the question, but you know what? It's a good day. Dude, I got divorced too. Man, and I kid you not, that was the most gut-wrenching, hard to understand, deal with things ever. You know, and I had to realize, you know, marriage is like one of them things that'll show you your true form when you're married. You know, you don't see these things about yourself or another person until you're invested in it. And I think that, dude, that shook me mentally. It was hard to bounce back from on my everyday. But like I told you, dude, I have favor. I started this program heavily in the midst of that divorce. And never did this program falter. I may be a complete wreck, just mad at the world. I'm okay, sad. Like, I may have been a complete wreck, but man, everything within Just Believe stayed consistently, and it was consistently going up. So it leveled me out and let me realize, like, all of these feelings that I feel in this season, there's a polar opposite to them, depending on how I invest my energy in them. And I think, man, all the heartbreak and like shame that I had for getting divorced, you know, my parents have been together, you know, I didn't like the way that felt at all. I learned a lot about myself. And my ex-wife, she's a good woman. You know, it didn't work out between us, but that was a horrible feeling. But hindsight 2020, I learned so much about myself. I've never been big on like therapy and counseling and stuff. I was always like the macho guy. But man, I really realized, you know, and it's not traditional therapy, but I understood at that point I could relate to almost anybody. I'd never believed in depression, dude. I always had this, you just got to pray about it, man. And that's what I was taught. And don't get me wrong, you do. But like, the Bible still doesn't call you to pray and not be functional in your action, you know? So I had to take a different look at things with that. And that revealed to me stuff that I had going on in my life that I didn't even think of, you know? And, you know, we're talking about how these worlds emerge, you know, submerge to each other. I don't care where you live at, like, trauma's trauma, you know, it's hard to deal with. We all cope with it different ways. So that was a dark time, but it brought forth a new man. Like, I'm not even close to the same person I was mentally, spiritually, like my physical, everything is changed, because it's like, I never want to be in that kind of a hurt again.
I'm holding back tears here because I feel what you're saying. And those who have been through it are also, they can literally feel what you're talking about. It wasn't something I had wanted. And, I tried to fix it for a couple years and it just didn't happen. And I did a lot of the questioning, like, God, why would you let this happen to me? You know? And now, looking back, it was a blessing. He taught me so much about myself. He set my kids, my whole thing that I was probably the most upset about was I was worried about my kids. And I didn't want a divorce to, you know, wreck them in their future. But what I found, and this was kind of hard for me to reconcile as a Christian, was my kids were better off without her and I together. Her and I are still friends. We're good at co-parenting, but her and I together, we weren't good for the kids. And the kids have been better off with us not together. And within a couple years, God brought a woman into my life that I knew right away. I knew. And we've been together. We've been married for 8 years here in just a couple months. So I met her online. The town that I was living in at the time, little tiny town in Idaho, the other only other single woman was my ex-wife. They're literally the only other single woman. So I got online and my wife, she's embarrassed about this, but I got on farmersonly.com. And it wasn't that I was really looking hard. I just, you know, I was lonely and I felt like there was no options there. So I tried that out for a couple months and I was kind of just getting sick of there just wasn't a lot of substance there. And I was this close to closing that account down. And I told myself, well, I'll expand the search radius just a little bit farther. Give it one more shot. I expanded the search radius. She was one of the first couple profiles to pop up. And yeah, I saw her picture. She was beautiful, but her bio was like 7 inches long and eloquently written. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, ooh, substance. And so I hit her up and we connected. That was October 13th. We met 3 times total before I proposed on January 1st, and we were married May 14th, and we both just knew. And we'd both been through enough life. She hadn't been married before, but she'd been through enough life. She was 36 when we got married, and so she'd had some life. But we were old enough and mature enough to not only to know what we wanted, but just as importantly, now we knew what we didn't want. And so when we were dating, there was no BSing around. Like, we asked the hard questions right up front, no wasting time. And man, God has richly blessed.
I like that, so, man. I like that.
It sounds like you have not yet found Miss Wright.
It's been a season of like learning how to like just be still and listen to God. He's got so many other things in front of me. And I told myself when I got divorced, like, from this point on, you focus on the mission. And, you know, I found a lot of stuff that backed that up. Like, God's not going to give a man a wife without a mission if he's a leader. A man is meant to lead. So if I don't know where my purpose is and what I'm doing in life, it's going to be hard to lead. And I think that was another hard thing in my marriage too. Like, I was still stepping away from my career, riding bulls, trying to figure out where exactly I fit in, how I was going to make it work. But like nowadays, oh dude, I know what I'm doing with my life. You know, I'm honed in. I know my rabbit. I don't care what hole it goes down. I can follow it. So I feel like things like that has allowed God to prepare me for like who he's got for me one of these days.
Right, because when you are locked in on your mission and you're sure in what God's will for your life is, and you're doing it and you're focused on that, when the time is right, God's going to bring in a woman that doesn't for distract sure. from that. That's the kind of stuff that, like, it speaks to my heart, because I went through it and so did you. And, you know, there's a lot of people listening that have went through it, or even sadder, they're going through it right now. And I feel for you guys. If you're going through that right now, keep your chin up, get in the Word, get to church, you know, find your purpose, find your faith, and then let God bring you out of the trial.
For sure. Yeah, same thing. I agree completely.
Throughout all of these journeys, your high points and your low points, what would you say have been your most valuable lessons learned that you are carrying forward into your life, but also sharing?
Man, laid out on the table, you know, love people. Love the hard ones to love. Love the people that don't love you back. Like, you know, even if they wouldn't pat you on the back or, you know, keep you from burning, you do the same thing for them regardless. You'd keep them from burning. Man, I think something that's covered a facet of, you know, whether it's training horses, whether it's been running these clinics, is intentionality. You know, you step to some of these younger horses, and, you know, they don't really have an idea of Joe Blow or what's going on when the wind's blowing. I think that having a very conscientious approach to what you want to achieve, and sticking to that vision, whether that's, like I said, with horses, same thing with kids, you have to kind of know the direction you want to see them go in. We're tailored by so many different devices and all these other, you know, distractions, you know, marriages, love, life, all that. You have to be intentional, man.
Do you have like a particular story, like a success story that really speaks to what you do and the success?
I have a collaborative that makes that. So I started this program in Stephenville with, you know, we're being straight up. I was riding around town with a bunch of little white girls hauling trailers and paint horses and pink halters and stuff like this in an open stock trailer. There's not a lot of black people there. So, you know, a lot of people ask me all the time, like, what in the world are you doing? And then to see like a couple of those girls, well, one in particular, like, she still comes and serves for the program now. This is 8-9 years later. You know, she comes out to Louisiana and helps put on these clinics, does the photography for them, you know, hauls horses for them. Like, she, it's cool to see that, because now I'm watching her learn how to pour into a generation younger than her, but she knows the vision. And then on the flip side of that, like, I've watched the transformation from kids who are receiving that help from us, you know, different faces, people that look like you and don't look like you, pouring into them. I'm able to see how like they're taking the responsibility and wanting to gain more from this. So it's all working together. But, you know, from this side of the fence with kids I started with, to knowing how to skip a step and get here to the same places with kids that are starting now. Yeah, man, it's been, like I said, dude, I don't have a lot of moments, dude. I have seasons. Seasons teach you things. Time is the test of everything.
So you said you do, when you do these clinics, you have about 60 kids. What's the age ranges? And, you know, are you Do you specifically want some outreach done to the juvenile?
Juvenile services, I give them their own event just because, you know, there are a lot of different backgrounds and traumas and stuff like that that we're facing. Although it's really nice to see kids who aren't in, you know, any kind of trouble, you know, be a positive influence. I think to protect the sanctity of, you know, everything that's happening, we give them a different learning environment. But, you know, I'm willing to do some more with juvenile services. I focused a lot of that here locally, just because I can, you know, I'm here to build a relationship with them. But any, you know, outside of that, just kids, most of the Western playgrounds, they cap off at 12 to 20. Yeah, that's a big range and, you know, impact a lot of kids. I feel like a lot of the smaller kids are too young for this stuff, you know, taking and receiving it and holding on to that information. But from about 12 to 20 years old, I think three or four of the camps throughout the year, 13 years old, but that's just insurance though.
Okay. So let's move on to a different topic. Did you get a chance to watch like my first episode that I sent you just so you knew what you were
getting into?
You kind of see where I'm at. Like I have this natural pull to try to bridge gaps. And especially in our part of the world right now, Southwest Montana, there's so many people moving in from other cultures and there's some struggle to adapt and to integrate. And on both sides, those of us who've been here aren't very accepting. And those who are moving in also aren't very accepting of the way we like to have things done around here and what we're used to. So I'm trying to bridge that gap, but that goes far beyond that. That it's really a human bridge of people who live in the rural and Western lifestyle and people that live in the urban lifestyle. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because you have a literal life experience in both sides. What's lacking right now? What is causing the divide, the urban and rural divide in your mind?
Cell phones, iPads, all this. I think a lot of that is going to cap at the kids. We, you know, our generation, we live in a place where before we seen cell phones and we knew what it was like to play outside and like meet people, have a genuine, you know, interaction as kids with other kids. Man, I see there's such a lack in it now where, you know, and kids all the way from 18 years old, they don't know how to walk up and shake a hand. It's like a head nod or, you know, something like that. And that's so common. But we're in such a place where we can just rush off to our own little worlds. I think that we're all hooked by the same thing, by, you know, our need for self, you know. I think that you put these kids in a place where they can play together. Parents are going to come pick their kids up in a place where they're playing together, and you provide an area for, you know, a place where these parents can get to meet and talk and just authentic settings, places where there's not intentionality with a lot of this. It's like, yeah, it's not just urban kids. It's not just rural or urban families and rural families. It's both of them are like, everybody wants to do their own thing. I don't have the antidote, man. That'd be what I'd say.
No, I agree. I think that the technology is a large portion of it because while there is some positives to it, it also allows a lot of divisiveness. People, and I mentioned this in one of my previous episodes, it's really easy when you're in your own bubble to only, and the internet feeds your own bubble. It feeds what you're interested in, not other stuff. So it just kind of makes the problem like us isolating ourselves to our own little sphere of understanding. It just makes the problem worse. However, I guess my idea with this podcast and having these real conversations is hopefully, you know, the damage is done. There's a cell phone in everybody's hand. Maybe use things like this podcast and this kind of digital media to kind of reach those people and be like, hey, there is a world outside of this phone. So that's kind of, yeah, I agree. Technology is on one hand, a blessing to our lives as far as convenience, but it's also,
you know, if we could implement more, you know, community events, whether that be, you know, where the whole town comes out for other stuff other than like fairs and things like that, or, you know, there's always going to be people moving in and moving out. You know, I think that community engagement activities, you know, I don't care if you, man, I tell you, I've had a hard time because there's a lot of difference that you see between, you know, Texans, and they're like, they're so upset with everybody from California moving there. It's this huge ball of integration that nobody is at peace with. But we only go to, you know, there's not stuff that brings both of those together, you know, like aside from eventing, people will get out and go things if they can go to a fair, bro. Like look at the Houston Rodeo. Every single walk of life was at the Houston Rodeo. And I'd love to see way more communities go back to like the old school, you know, throwing pies and stuff like that. Like, you know, fairs, good times where if you're new to a community or you've been there for a while, like you have a way to serve that community and you have a way to learn about them.
No, I love it. I love it. That's all great stuff. And it also speaks to the importance of rodeo to Western culture. It attracts people that normally wouldn't care, you know, and it is maybe a gateway or a doorway into people wanting to know more about our culture, which might lead them into wanting to learn more about where their food comes from or, you know, who are these cowboys? What do they do for a living?
Like I've seen so many people like, what's her name? Beyonce got this picture and I guess Professional Choice Pads commented on it. I've been seeing this thing float around and I see like people like it, people don't. Frankly, I don't care. I don't listen to mainstream music. But at the end of the day, if you're looking at this from a advancement standpoint, this is going to bring a lot of people attention to the Western culture. Granted, some of that's bad attention, but one, us being educated in this, this means that God's appointing us a job. He's handing us a whole nother demographic of people that we can love on and educate about things that are substantial. We don't need rock music. We don't need hip hop music. We don't need country music. We don't have to have any of that kind of stuff. We always have to have food. We always have to have a means of survival. So us in knowledge, I feel like our job is to be considerate that there's going to be a lot of ignorance that follows these trends and people coming in. But if you know, that's our job to teach out the ignorance.
All right. So last question of the main part of the interview, what would you say would be your best life advice to anybody?
Be still. Learn to be still. Man, stillness, it brings so many, and I don't mean still as I'm not doing anything, but being still in the mind and content with where you're at. I'm not saying be stagnant or complacent, but I am saying that when you know you're working at something, honor those efforts and allow the process, you know, to work itself out. There's so many times that I think that God is like voiding us and from things that we don't need just in the stillness. And you're still, you're intentional. When you're still, you make clear decisions. More so when you're still, you don't run the long way around and answer, you know, most of the time in stillness, the answer finds you.
And when you're still and content, you also have more opportunity for gratitude.
For sure. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. So the last part of this main interview is just kind of the way we conclude it is just tell people where they can connect with you. And if you have events coming up, tell us about that. So what's next for Jamon?
So, life's been good with the horse training. So I have a barn full of them right now. And we have a series of camps that start here in April, all the way from Shreveport to South Carolina and California, everywhere but Montana, I'm guessing, in between right now. But we have a tour of Western playgrounds getting ready to happen spread out the United States. I'm pretty pumped about it because every year this is my opportunity to go travel, take some kids from different places, hiking, you know, fishing, camping. We get to incorporate all that. So I'm pretty pumped about that. If you you think you're interested in getting to some of the clinics, if you look on our website, it's justbelievetraining.com. And the email is justbelievetraining@gmail.com. Shoot me some questions. But our schedule for our season is on there. You can see where most of our events are going to be at this year, what they're going to incorporate. Instagram, Facebook, they're all there.
Awesome. I'll put the links to all of that in the show notes. And then if people want to contribute to what you have going on, what are your biggest needs right now? And how do they go about trying to be part of what you have put together?
Shoot me an email or a message on Facebook and Instagram. You know, you can always donate on the website and stuff. But, you know, like I said, the money is always going to come. But I think that I'm on a mission to recruit people who want to use their gift. But don't get me wrong. We take all the funding we can get. This is a nonprofit. But If it's available, consider how you can invest some of your time. If that means that you have one or two resources local that, you know, if we set up a camp, you'd let us utilize, you know, if you have different resources and people that you think would be interested in connecting, or if you have a gift that you want to share and we need to come up with a plan on how to get you involved with this, I think sending me an email between me and my staff, we'll get back to you and guys pretty quick. And get to brainstorming how, you know, everybody can use their gift to serve.
Juman, I'm so grateful that you were able to take the time to jump on this call with me. I've really been looking forward to this conversation, and I think that a lot of good will come out of it. And I just want to tell you, I'm grateful for what you're doing and for the conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate the time for sure. And your stories.
All right. So the way this works, I'm going to ask you a question. Just give your immediate answer first. If you want to expound on it, that's fine, but give the immediate answer first. And it's not really rapid fire, but I'm just going to go through them kind of quick. They're mostly just lighthearted and fun. Yeah. All right. Question number one. If money was no object, where would you want to live?
Probably my grandpa's place in Colorado. Or Italy.
What? Or Italy. Whoa. Or Italy. Gotta tell me why Italy.
Italy, Argentina. I like their culture. I want to do some cowboying in Italy for sure, in the mountains.
Awesome. Cool. Well, if you haven't had a chance to listen to my last podcast with JB Zilke, as far as cowboying in other parts of the world, you need to check that out.
For sure.
What is your favorite brand of vehicle?
Truck. I love a Dodge. Car, fuel efficient, Toyota. It's easy to fix.
What is your favorite music?
I really like violin. Not like traditional slow, but like violin where it's like a beat, remixes with violin. That's cool. I listen to a lot of Christian music. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff lately, but yeah, I'd probably say violin. What a cool beat behind it.
All right. So give me an example of that. Like, if somebody wanted to listen to what that sounds like, what's a song that.
Look up Black Violin.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a group, and man, these guys are cold on violin, and just, yeah, you'll see.
What is your favorite meal?
Spaghetti, hands down.
Really?
Yep. Wow. Crawfish etouffee is probably right behind it, but I've been on the season of spaghetti, man. It's just, I've loved it since I was a kid. I'm kind of over the crawfish because they're so small and the seasonal, and that's all we eat in Louisiana is Cajun food, but spaghetti, spaghetti, spaghetti.
What is your favorite vacation destination?
Today, probably Argentina.
Gosh, I want to get down there. I have so many friends that have spent time down there, and then talking to JB Zilke and reading his book, Argentina just keeps coming up. I'm going to have to make a trip down there someday.
I need you to introduce me to this guy then. Yeah, because I've been talking to some guys off Instagram. But you know, it's always creepy planning stuff with somebody you never met. But to get a good reference of some other places to go, I got a trip planned. I'm just going to take myself and see what I can get into. I did that in Costa Rica. I got to work with some cat. I went down there for a vacation, kind of. And man, I ended up spending days just roping Bramers out in the pasture right on the bottom of a volcano. Worked out perfect.
So I'll connect you to, and you'll really appreciate his book. He's cowboyed on 6 continents.
Yeah.
And like herded reindeer while riding reindeer. Spent a bunch of time in Argentina. So yeah, I will definitely get you guys connected. I think you have some common interests there. What is your favorite Western movie or TV show?
Tombstone. Western TV show. I don't know, man. I haven't had a TV in years. I just don't watch TV.
Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely not. That was fun, but I don't want to watch myself on TV like that. It's weird.
No, it's weird seeing yourself on TV.
For sure.
I did enjoy the show, though. And on that note, I really appreciated how you handled yourself. You maintained your composure in an area there was a moment there where I thought, oh, he's going to throw hands, but you stopped yourself. And honestly, I think by the end of the show, your character had really spoken for itself. So excellent work.
Thank you.
Who is your favorite rodeo athlete of all time?
probably Charlie Sampson, just because, you know, I see how much he invested in me, for sure.
Great answer. Yeah. Who has been your biggest hero?
Aside from Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, probably my grandpa.
What is the best book you have read recently?
Can I give you two? I'm a bookie. Yeah. So one, I've read it again. It's called In Search of a Proverbs 31 Man. And it is just taught, it's from a woman's perspective on what that looks like. It's, we always read about men's perspectives on menship stuff, but biblical examples, through the lens of a woman, and man, that's pretty good. And then there's another one called The Little Red Book of Selling. And where you would think about, it's just this dropping game on how to sell stuff. It talks about how to market yourself more. And it coincides with what I believe about giving something away first before you ask for something. That book has been kind of a game changer on how I focus on, you know, investing in people and things.
I'm going to definitely check that out. I actually had a conversation yesterday where people, I had two different people that were asking me, you know, why I'm not chasing sponsors for this podcast yet. And honestly, it's because it's new, but I really want to prove that it has value. I want to make sure that there's value out there for free because it's a passion project. I don't have to make money on it. I've really just spent money on it, but, yeah, I want to provide value and I want that to be something that people can really see and feel before I ever pursue any sponsors.
For sure. Yeah.
Cause I think that it's more genuine that way.
You can speak to your product.
Right. And then the mission isn't for income. The mission isn't revenue. The mission is just to share a story. And, yeah. And that's super important to me. Now, if income does come in at some point, as I'm sure Bring you it. Can identify with, yeah, heck yeah. All right. So the last question is a little bit more heavy, but it's a very important one. What is the most impactful advice that anyone has ever given you?
Man, hands down, God honors those who honor him with their talents. This is this phrase shifted me when I was in my season of walking away from riding bulls. I'd won about 15 grand the week before. God called me, asked me to come work for a Christian school. I'm like, dude, I'm not doing that. You know, not that it was a Christian school. I just didn't want to work with kids. I wanted to go rodeo. And man, he told me, he's like, God honors those who honor him with their talents. I hung up in my face. Shortly after that, he called me back. I broke my arm the next day and was like, all right, man, let's try this. man, it's like, really, you do what God has put inside of your heart. And if you're not sure, you pray on it, you be still. And inside of that, man, he's going to provide a way. If you're willing to give him your resources, that your innate resources, the things that he's put inside of you, not your money and your time so much, you know, yeah, for sure. God honors those who honor him with their talents.
I love it. On that note, I'm going to let you go to spend time with your family and pursue your talents. Thank you so much for being a part of the Living Western podcast and sharing your story with us and with the world.
That was great. Thank you.
This concludes episode number 5 with our guest, Mr. Jamon Turner. What a fascinating episode. I'm sure all of you that are listening could tell that Jamon is a very driven individual. And he's got a very clear vision for what he wants out of life and what his purpose is right now. And man, do I respect that. It's inspiring. And it's clear that because he knows what he's supposed to be doing with his life, he's making a difference in a big way. These young people that he's helping out, many of them don't have many other choices to get out of their city bubble, to get out of that mindset. You know, we operate based on what we know. And if you don't expand the bubble of what you know, then you're extremely limited. And Jamon, through all this training that he puts on in these Western Playground clinics, he is expanding the bubble of these young people who sign up for his camps. And one of the things I really enjoy was that not only are these Western Playground camps something that he's not just introducing them to horses, which is great. I mean, and that's why I'm sure a lot of the kids are going, but he's introducing them to other trades. whether it's welding or excavation or construction, whatever. Those are amazing skills that he's opening a door for these young people to see. And I have a lot of respect for him for that. In fact, a big part of the reason that I reached out to him and got him on the show was I watched him on the Ultimate Cowboy Showdown. And there was, I mentioned this in the episode, but there was a particular point within that show, Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, season number 3, where the host, Trace Adkins, sat down one-on-one with Jamon and was just talking to him about his purpose and what he would do with the winnings if he won that show. And Jamon had a very clear vision for what he was going to do with those winnings and what he was about. And it wasn't about himself at all. He was going to use those winnings to further his mission of being a mentor to these young people. I hope to be able to talk to him again in the future, and I really would love to be able to support his project in some way or another. If you, the listener, would like to be involved with one of Jamon's projects or one of his Western Playground days, please contact him. I will put all the links that I have to his website and his social media handles in the show notes below. But his website is justbelievetraining.com. So if you don't even go to the show notes, just remember justbelievetraining.com, and that will pull up everything that you need to know. But if you would like to make a difference in some of these young people's lives that Jamon is able to reach, get a hold of him. Support him however you can. And you know what? What I respect the most about him is that he's going to do this whether he has help from other people or not. So you might as well help him out and help him take his mission farther. Once again, I really appreciate you listening and being a part of this conversation. My name is Clayton Marxer, and you're listening to Living Western. We'll see you next time.